I'm not pulling out of the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another Drive to Work Coronavirus Edition. So as I've been doing, I've been interviewing people because I in my car, it's actually hard to do interviews if they're not sitting next to me. And I've had a few carpool guests. But anyway, today, I've gotten Ari Nee. Nee, is that correct? So Ari, introduce yourself.
Nia.
What?
Nee or Nia is fine.
Nee or Nia, okay. So Ari, among other things, is the winner of the third Great Designer Search. And is currently working every day with me. So say hi, Ari.
Hello. This is my first time on Drive to Work. I'm very excited to be here.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. Let's start from the beginning. So how did you get into magic? What was your introduction to magic?
My introduction to magic, so I was in high school, and in 1994, I think it was. Yeah, fall of 1994.
Like the dark?
I moved back to America, Fallen Empires. So
Fallen
I moved
Empires,
back to America from Japan, and okay. I went to school, and I saw people playing this game on tables, like around, like between classes or in free periods. And I was like, whoa, that looks really interesting. What is it? And, you know, I would like ask people what was going on. And eventually, you know, I found someone to like sell me a deck and teach me how to play. So that was the beginning of that.
Okay. So you played, did you play continually or did you take any breaks along the way?
No, I definitely took breaks. I was out for all of Mercadian Masks block. And I played sort of off and on for a long time, but I didn't get like seriously into like drafting and like going to FNM every week until Ravnica. But then I started playing a lot around Ravnica Time Spiral.
So when did you start doing card design?
Custom card design. So GDS1, I just sort of watched because I was still sort of on track to be an academic at the time. I was like, oh, this looks fun, but I'm not going to try. I have other plans. And then GDS2 came around and I was like, this is really cool. I want to give it a try this time. And so I did the multiple choice test. And I was two questions short, so that was it was very, very sad, big tragedy. But for GDS2, there was this community component of the competition. As your viewers, some of your viewers may remember, there was a wiki, and the top eight were actually soliciting designs from the community to use in their submissions. They did not design all the cards themselves. They were not allowed to. They had to use community submissions. So they had to like sort of curate this giant slush pile of, you know, a bunch of wannabes who wanted to design cards for them. And so I just did a ton of that. I designed a lot of cards for Ethan Fleischer, for Scott Van Essen, for Sean Main, for, you know, Devin Rule, all those people to try to help them get jobs at Wizards.
And three of them did, of the ones you just named.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you involved in the creation of Goblin Artisans?
Yes, I was one of the core people in Goblin Artisans because, like, after the end of GDS2, like, we'd sort of formed this big community around design, right, including the finalists, but also the hangers-on of the finalists. I believe we called ourselves Tweet Force Alpha because we were using, you know, if like Ethan or someone wanted a card designed quickly, rather than post it on the wiki, it was faster to just tweet, hey, can somebody make this a card that, you know, a green common that uses this mechanic that's a creature, and then post it on the wiki. And that was the fastest way to alert us all, you know. Anyway, so a bunch of us and the finalists who had not yet flown out to Renton, so they didn't know which of them was going to get hired. So some of us and some of the finalists were like, we should start a blog and write about magic design and, like, you know, get really good at designing our own sets. And so we did.
Okay. So that was GDS2. So,
yes.
Okay. GDS3, what happened there?
Right. So GDS3 was about 7 years after GDS2,
six or seven years. Roughly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So in the intermediate time, like, you know, I'd off and on been active at Goblin Artisans, like designing cards myself, giving other people feedback on their designs. You know, and how much time I spent on that sort of depended on how much free time I had. Then when GDS3 was announced, I hadn't actually, I'd been really busy with other things, so I hadn't actually even been playing Magic recently. Like, the last time I'd played was Kaladesh, and both Amonkhet and Ixalan had come out since then. So the somebody sent it to, like, the Goblin Artisans authors list. I was like, oh, wow, this is happening, right? Because I wasn't attached to any Magic circles. And then I clicked on it, and I was like, oh, my God, it's back. This is finally my chance.
Okay, so you entered. So it's funny, for the third one, we had way, way, way more people enter than we had the first two. I think the first GDS1, we had 1,200 maybe apply. In GDS2, we had like maybe 1,800 apply. And then GDS3, it was over 5,000. Yep. It was, yeah, just an avalanche of people. Which partly meant that you had to score really high on the test. So last time you missed the multiple choice test by two. So yep. How'd you handle it this time?
So I was not going to take any chances with the multiple choice test this time, because I was like, you know, I bet if I get past the, I felt like that was like the most likely point for me to get eliminated, because that's when most people get eliminated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I fortunately had that day mostly off of work already. So I just spent all day doing the exam. I went through the whole exam and I selected my answers. I made a spreadsheet. I selected my answers and I wrote like a short justification, maybe just a few words or maybe a whole paragraph on why I thought my answer was correct and the other ones were wrong. Because like the act of writing something down helps you reevaluate whether or not it's true.
Mm-hmm. All right. How'd you end up?
Sorry?
How'd you end up on your multiple choice?
I got 73 out of 75, which was the minimum possible.
Right, that was the cutoff.
Passing grade. That was the cutoff. And I missed two questions, both of which were on rarity. I thought the card which was a mythic was only a rare, and the card which was a rare was only an uncommon. So, I mean, that tells you a little something about me as a designer, I guess.
Okay, so you then make it into so after the multiple choice was the card design part.
Yes.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, I had to go through, so I think 98 people made it past that section, 96 or 98.
There were 94, and here's how I know, because after the top eight were chosen, the remaining people said that they had been 86th.
Ah, okay, very cute. Yes. So there were 94 people, I mean, it had to do, we had a break, like, if you took 72 out of 75, we had too many people that I couldn't grade. We could take about 100. And so two wrong broke at 94. So I then blindly, meaning I have no idea who the people were. I graded all 94 tests. And then I broke them into three categories. And there was no, maybe, yes. And then we evaluated all the yeses first. The idea being if we could get our people from the yeses, we didn't need to look in the maybes. And you were in the yes pile, and then even among the yes piles, all the judges sort of met, and then we, from the yes pile, we didn't end up needing the maybes, from the yes pile, we made a yes, no, and maybe from the yes pile, and you were in the yes pile, you were in the yes pile of the yeses, so you were, like, there were a bunch of people that were fighting for the last few slots, you were in very early on, you didn't actually have to fight for the last few slots. Okay, so it starts. Tell us a little bit about the act of doing the Great Designer Search.
Yeah, so this was super exciting. I remember when I got the email from you that I made top eight. I was in the kitchen cooking dinner for Chinese New Year with my partner. Like, we had 10 people coming over later that night, and I had like 3 pounds of pork belly on the stove. And then I got this email, and I'm screaming, "Oh my God, I made it! I made the top eight!" So then we got these challenges every 2 weeks where they assigned us a test of some sort where we had to design a bunch of cards to some particular specification. And
all of this is online, by the way. If you don't know what we're talking about, search for Great Designer Search 3. This is all online. Everything Ari's talking about, you can see all the stuff they made and the judges and everything. So,
Yeah, it's all, in fact, it's stored on a convenient single web page where if you just search for my name and Great Designer Search 3, you can click on each challenge and it'll pop up everything I made for that challenge. It's all there. Yeah, so for each of these challenges came out on like late in the day on Thursday, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was due Sunday night.
Right.
Yeah, so we had...
Yeah, all day Friday, all day Saturday, all day Sunday.
Yeah, so we had like three, you know, about pi days to take care of it. Those were every 2 weeks. And the thing was, we got those at the same time as we got the results of the previous one. So there was sort of a lot. There was a lot to process. It was like, all right, here's what happened in the previous one. You did amazing, or you did really bad. Please do better next time. And by the way, here's your new challenge.
Oh, real quickly, just for people that might not be familiar with the Great Designer Search, the way it works is we had three regular judges, which were me, Eric Lauer, and Melissa DeTora, and then we had a guest judge. So there was always four judges, but the fourth judge would rotate. And so they would turn in cards, and then for every card, every judge would comment on it. So there was a decent amount of feedback. And the judges, we wouldn't even always completely agree. We would generally agree, but we would vary a little bit on certain things. You'd get all that feedback. And then in addition to the feedback, you then get, and here's the next challenge.
Yeah. Oh, and also we received everyone else's feedback and we're told you should read everyone else's feedback too so you don't make their mistakes. But eventually I stopped doing that because I was like, my brain can only hold so much. I gotta focus on my cards I'm designing.
Okay, so there were five different challenges.
Yes.
And so we started with eight people. Each challenge, we knock out one person in true reality show style. And then the end, there'll be three people. And then those three people get flown out to Wizards.
Yes.
So the final three people were you, Jeremy, what is it, Geist?
Jeremy Geist
and Chris Mooney, yeah. Yep. Okay, so what was it like flying out to Wizards? What was that like?
It was pretty exciting. My flight left at like very early in the morning on Eastern times. So I was, but you know, it was still the day before the interviews. So I had time to like rest and walk around Renton. We had dinner with you and Ben Hayes and Mark Gottlieb, I think.
I think that's right. Yeah.
So I got to, you know, I got to meet you. I got to meet Chris Mooney and Jeremy Geist, who are just wonderful, wonderful folks. And then it was like, all right, get a good night's sleep. The next morning's going to be a very busy day for you.
Yeah. So basically, there were a couple things we did. So the first was the gauntlet, which was you have 3 hour interviews with three different groups, and then the three of you would rotate between the three groups.
Yes.
But it was 3 hours worth of interviews with most of the higher, you know, the I'll call the muckety mucks of R&D. One of the groups was all the judges, one of the groups was the managers, and one of the groups was
the bosses,
right? So
right.
And how'd the interviews go? What do you think?
I thought they went pretty well. It was interesting. I remember the judge questions. Eric Lauer asked me a bunch of things about actual card designs, which the other groups didn't do so much. They were asking more about sort of
employment stuff,
you know, work stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So we did the interviews and then we did a live challenge. So
first we did Magic for Lunch.
Oh, we did Magic for Lunch. Right. You guys had lunch. What did we play?
It was Dominaria Sealed, and okay. I had a green-white deck, and I was up against Paul Cheon, and he beat me.
Really,
well, actually, no. We didn't finish the game, but he was going to win.
Well, Paul Cheon's very good.
He's pretty good at Magic.
Okay, so we had lunch, you got to play some Magic, and then we had a live challenge. This was the final challenge.
Yes.
And the way the live challenge works is... occasionally, this doesn't happen all that often, but occasionally we have to make changes very late in the process. And so the scenario for is always, okay, very late in the process, something has to happen. You have an hour. Here's these crazy restraints. And usually it's like, this card has to change, but it has to keep the art, and the name has to fit within these parameters, because that's where it's locked in collector number. And then it has to be this color. And so you had to, so what card did I have you redesign? I forget what card it was.
Seance. It was Seance.
Oh, Seance. Okay. And then you guys had an hour. And then the second hour was you pitching your ideas to the other contestants and a bunch of the judges, basically.
Yes.
And so how'd that go?
That was very, very difficult for me. I had not slept very much the previous night because I had gotten up early for a flight. And then the night before, I was like, this is the biggest day of my life. I also cannot sleep. So I was kind of just running on empty by then. I had no brain left at all. And I had 1 hour to design the most important three cards of my life. So I didn't feel like I did that great, to be honest. It was a challenge.
You actually did. You did decently well. My memory of it is, in the interview, we thought Chris had done best in the interview, but you had done second best in the interview.
Yep.
And in the individual design challenge, I think you and...
the reverse.
Yeah, it was the reverse. Well, I think you and Jeremy were very close.
Okay.
And I think Chris was third in that. But you had come in kind of in first place, like...
Yep.
We had ranked you based, but what the judges did every week was we would figure out how you did on that challenge, and they would stack rank you up to then how you were doing. So we both had a ranking for the challenge and an overall ranking on how you were doing, because we cut the worst person, not the worst person at the challenge.
Right.
Meaning we were trying to hire somebody. So if a really good person had a bad week, they wouldn't necessarily get cut if the conglomerate of all their work had been good.
Right. Which and is so, because I think I was last place on the circus challenge, maybe.
You might have been, yes.
I was last or second to last on that.
So anyway, we would stack rank you. So coming into this, it was you, then Jeremy, then Chris, I think was the stack ranking coming into the final day.
Yep.
Okay, so tell about the, how'd you find out that you'd won?
So after the challenge where we'd, you know, fixed the seance into an entirely new card in 1 hour, you know, under, you know, extreme duress. Then we got a moment to like chill a bit while the judges conferred. And then they brought all three of us into a room and said, everyone did a really great job. We were impressed with all of you, but we have to pick a winner. And that winner is Ari. And that was sort of a shocking moment to me. Not that I didn't think I could win, but it was just sort of, you know, I'd spent like months working really, really hard on this competition, pouring a ton of energy into it. And I'd also spent sort of the previous 7 years with Goblin Artisans training for it. So it was a culmination of a lot for me. It was a very emotional moment.
Okay. So then you won. Mm-hmm. So the way it works is the prize for winning is you get a 6-month internship.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea with the internship is kind of a tryout, you know.
Yep.
At the end of it, we never do the internship without the ability to transfer it into a full-time job.
Yep.
But there is, so you win the contest and then kind of you get 6 months to further sort of show what you're capable of. Although, it's a paid internship and, you know, I mean, it's,
yes.
Okay. So you win.
Yes.
When did the GDS end? In April, May? May,
it was,
I think.
It ended in June.
It was in June. Yeah, right. It was in early June. And then you started in September, right?
Yeah, so I had some projects to finish up in Boston, and so I asked to for a start date in early September, which Wizards gave me, and so then I moved out to Renton, and I believe September 4th, was my first day at work.
Okay, so what was it like, your first day at work? What was that like?
I'm trying to remember what happened on my first day. Some of it was like really sort of basic little hoops to jump through, like, oh, I need to like get my computer set up and have a login. I have to go through this orientation. I have to read. Somehow I already have 50 emails, even though I've been here an hour. But then, like, I think the first day I also, like, I wasn't on any teams yet. Like, my assignment was just, like, follow Rosewater around. He'll tell you some stuff to do. And so I think we went into a vision design meeting that Ethan Fleischer was leading that day.
Okay.
And talked about some mechanics and mm-hmm. like actually designed like a new mechanic for a set that he was working on together.
And just give people some scope. So this was, it'll be 2 years this September, right?
Yes.
And the set you're talking about is not out yet.
Yes, the set I'm talking about is still a ways away.
Right. So I just, for people to understand, like, that, like, one of the things that I brought Ari on to talk, like, we can't even talk that much about things he's done because he hasn't been here long enough that all the, that there's a few things he's done that you guys have seen, but very little, that most of the stuff he's done are just, you know, and he's done a lot of work, just stuff you haven't seen yet. So I mean, two things. One is I want to talk a little bit about stuff they have seen, but the second thing is, before I get to that, is you were an outsider, right? You were someone who just played Magic. I mean, you weren't a Pro Tour player. You were just somebody who played Magic, and all of a sudden, I mean, you put a lot of work in. It's not like you didn't earn it, but all of a sudden, you're now working in R&D. Like, what is that like?
It was a big adjustment because I think the way sort of like amateur for fun Magic designers think about design is like super different from how we think about it in R&D.
Well, give us a sense of how is it different?
So I was thinking about this because I anticipated you would ask me this, and there's sort of two main things. One is like broad appeal, right? Like if you're making if I'm at Goblin Artisans posting on my own blog, here's a cool card I made. I can post whatever I want, and no one has to like it but me, right? I don't have to worry about how many players are going to care about this. I don't have to worry about, like, is this the kind of mechanic that is going to, like, carry a set on its shoulders? Is this going to be, like, a key selling point that will make people, people very excited, customers excited to buy lots of packs of this? Like, that's not something you worry about if you're an amateur designer. You're just designing kind of for yourself and for your close peers. So that's one thing. The other big thing, I think, is that we don't think in the amateur design community, we don't really think very much about the pipeline, about the people further downstream of us. And here's what I mean by that. In Magic R&D, we're working up in vision design. You know, occasionally I'm on a set design team, but like I'm, you know, about 2 years from release date, whereas much closer to release date are people like late set design and play design who are working on tuning these cards very carefully for competitive play, for constructed and also competitive limited play. So these people need to be able to make subtle adjustments to the strength of a card to get its power level exactly in the right place, which is one of the reasons that like you'll see cards that are in sets that have a lot of text on them. Sometimes you need all that text to make sure that the card is doing exactly what it needs to do to make for the optimal standard environment. Whereas if you're designing for a blog or a subreddit or whatever, you can just write whatever elegant text you want on a card, cost it something, and it never has to change. And so here's an example of like why that can be problematic in practice. Suppose I want to make the most elegant murder I can, right? Well, that's the card murder, right? 1BB, destroy target creature. Well, that's not really good enough to be a top tier standard constructed card as it is, but we can't make it 2 mana, right? It has no knobs. There's nothing to adjust as long as it just says destroy target creature. And that's why you'll see cards like Hero's Downfall or like Murderous Rider that have, you know, more going on, that there are little things that play design can adjust to make sure it's exactly in the right spot. We don't have to worry about that when we're just designing. We're being poets, whereas inside the building, you have to be more legislators, but you want your work to look like poetry.
And you were mentioning, so you talked about set design and play design,
yes.
But that's just the beginning. You know, we have editors, we have rules, we have organized play, we have digital, there's endless, like, vision's the very, very beginning of it, right? Like, one of the things that's funny is vision in some level doesn't have to interact with a lot of people while we're making it because we're before everybody, but every other person's going to have to deal with it. So, like, it is our job to talk to all these different people to make sure that we're making a set that can be edited, making a set that the rules can work, making a set that digital can use, making a set that organized play can use, making a set that can be balanced, making, you know, like, there's all these things you have to think about, and you're correct. I think when you're outside the building, you can care about none of that. It's like, I'm just making cool sets, and...
Right. Yeah. All you see is the finished product, and, you know, I'm not going to worry about art or editing for my thing. Like, I'm just going to make up some words, put them on a card. I don't care about the tournament environment and how it impacts it. What tournament environment, right?
Yeah.
So, the different... really a different set of priorities and way more things to worry about once you're inside the building.
Okay, so here's another question. So, other... Okay, obviously... How we function is a little different, but what, from an outsider perspective, what was the most different coming into R&D that you didn't expect? You're like, I just didn't, now having lived this life for a while, like, what was the most, from an outsider perspective, like, I didn't expect this at all, but this is the way it is.
That's hard to say. I guess things are generally maybe a lot more like there's a lot more communication going on all the time where like people are sort of moving up and down the pipeline and talking to external partners, but also just consulting each other, just like randomly, like, hey, I have an idea, who's within shouting distance who can tell me if this is a good idea. Right. And like the extent to which it's like super useful to know who's good at what, right? It's like, oh, I need to know, is this any good in Commander? I need to talk to someone who's more of a Commander specialist because I only kind of know Commander, right? Or I need to know, like, is this whole mechanic not going to be something we can translate into other languages? Like, let me go talk to the editing team. Well, like, we just do that all the time. There's just all this collaboration going on, which... You know, it's not that I thought it wouldn't exist, but I sort of didn't understand how constant it is.
Yeah, another thing that I hear a lot from new people is the number of things going on consecutively, like all at the same time, that the audience, when you hear about something, we're just talking about one thing. So it's like, oh, yeah. Well, here's how we made this set. And we're giving the story of just this set in a vacuum because that's what we're talking about. But one of the things that I know when I talk to new people who come in R&D is... There's 40 things going on at once. Like, there's not that you're doing all of them, but the idea that you're trying to at least be somewhat aware. Like, my job, I have to be more aware than most. But like, just the idea of you're jumping into the thing and there's so much is going on at once and so many different projects are going on at once. What is that like?
Yeah, it's challenging because you don't have the luxury of focusing on a single set. You're always going to be on a bunch of teams at once, and you want to make all of those sort of as awesome as they can be and understand each of those sets place in the ecosystem of like where they come out and like how they affect the things before and after them. And you want to like put, you know, try to eat, like you're coming up with ideas for mechanics, ideas for cards. Like, okay, well, where does this fit? If I have a really cool idea for a mechanic, but it actually doesn't make sense in this set, should I like sit on this and pitch it for the next set? Or is it actually not that good an idea? Or like, what, you know, There's just a lot of things, and you're switching gears all the time, going into different teams, and it also all the people leading these sets have somewhat different styles. You know, you like when I'm on a vision team, you lead a set one way, and Ethan Fleischer will lead a set a different way, and Mark Gottlieb will lead a set a different way, and so it's fascinating to see. Okay, what are these differences in the methodology, and how does that come out in the results? You know, how does that reflect their personality? How does that reflect their tastes as a game designer?
Okay, so watch this, since I'm sure the audience is curious. What am I like as a vision lead? What's unique to me as a vision lead versus other people?
I would say more so than the other people, you are very instinctive, right? That you rely very heavily on your experience to give you an incredibly reliable gut feeling of whether or not something's going to work. And so it's not sort of like directive in that like, okay, we need to go through these things one at a time and test all of them. And I mean, we do test a lot of things, but it's more like we'll play test and then you'll just see what happens in play test and be like, yeah, this thing just isn't quite doing the thing. All right, that's where we're going to work on next. It's, you know, so it's more spur of the moment.
Okay. One of the things that we're almost out of time. I'm almost to work, but So hold on 1 second. Sorry. You can tell this is live. I'm getting a call. Put that over here. Sorry. Okay. One last thing before we wrap up here. The one thing I'm excited for is for the audience to get a chance to see all the stuff you've done, because so much of what you've done isn't out yet. Mm-hmm. So in the next year, only using code names, what is the thing that you worked on in the next year that you're most excited to see come out?
In the next year?
Yeah.
Let's see. I think I would say in Equestrian. So Equestrian was one of the first vision design teams I was on, and I just did a lot of card designs for that one, and I think a lot of them are still in there.
Okay, so Equestrian. Excited for Equestrian. So Equestrian comes out, I think it's the first set of 2021?
Yes, that sounds right.
Yeah, I think it's the first set of 2021. So, diving is this fall, and Equestrian is the next standard legal set after diving.
Yes.
So.
Oh wait, actually, there's, but M21 is this summer, right?
M21 is this summer, yeah.
As is Jumpstart.
As is Jumpstart, yeah.
Actually, yeah. There's I take it back. There's a lot of my work in there too.
Yeah, you worked a lot on Jumpstart, you know.
I did quite a lot of work on Jumpstart. And I fought passionately for some of the themes and tried to tune some of the decks. I'm very interested to see how that comes out.
Okay. Well, anyway, I want to thank you, Ari. This has been a fascinating drive to work.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for joining me. I'm sure I'll have you on again. I feel like we just barely touched the, by the end of this, you just started working at Wizard. So, I'll have to bring you on for some more, but anyway, thanks for joining us. But I'm at my den, so we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic with Ari, it's time for me to be making magic. So I'll see you guys all next time. Bye-bye.